The Sun Dance. Two of the seven annual Wakwa Hedo, or Great Dances, were danced by all nine houses. In the World Dance of Cosmic Renewal at the equinox of spring, Earth and Sky danced at the same time, but not together. People of the Earth Houses offered all earthly things to the use and for the blessing of the Sky People, who, dancing in their own places, received and returned the blessing to Earth. The world ceremonies were referred to by scholars as parting or sorting, getting everything established, as it were, in its own place. In the ceremonies of the sun at the solstice of winter, all that was parted was brought back together. All beings of both earth and sky, of all planes of being, met and danced the sun together. This was not an easy business for ordinary mortals. The sun was considered the most arcane, intense, and dangerous of all dances. Those who wished to participate fully in the mysteries and ceremonies, to dance the inner sun, trained for years. Of an old person dying, people said, "He's ready to dance the inner sun." Most people participated only in the general ceremonies or outer sun, and the extent of their participation was entirely a matter of choice. It was difficult to keep out of a town-wide binge, such as the wine dance, and everyone joined in at least one of the Knights of the World dance, but the ceremonies of the sun were particularly attractive to people of introverted or mystical temperament, and might merely be observed from outside by many townsfolk. Children and adolescents had an important part, both active and passive, in the Advent period before the solstice, the time called the 21 days. During the 21 days, little children would find a seedling tree or shrub in the woods, transplant it into a tub or basket, and keep it hidden until, at the sunrise, the morning of the solstice, they presented it triumphantly to a beloved or admired adult. Older children might do the same, or might have found and nurtured a wild gathering tree, a nut tree or fruit tree or an ink oak, unclaimed in the woods, or might have planted and tended a bearing tree in the town orchards, perhaps for several years, and this they would present at the sunrise to an adult they wished to show love and honor to. Often the gift trees were decorated with oak galls and nutshells painted in bright colors, with blown glass ornaments, and with feathers tied on the branches. These feather words were wonderfully ornate and delicate little works of art. Children and adolescents also saw to it that the trees growing in the commonplace and dancing place of the town were decorated, though the rain was often hard on the fine show. Apprentices in the milling art in the upper valley towns strung small lights on the trees, making a marvelous colored, glimmering display, most splendid on the first night of the 21, but thinning out and darkening as the ceremonial period went on. Branches of juniper, fir, pine, and evergreen toyon with its bright red berries were put up over balconies and doorways and made into wreaths and garlands for the rooms. Special candles, often colored red and scented with bay laurel or rosemary, were made by the young people and lighted nightly for the 21 nights. By the last of the nights, they should have burned quite down. The sacred or intellectual practices held in the five heimas during the 21 days were concerned with bringing the left hand and the right hand, the earth and sky, closer together until they should meet in the place and time of the solstice dance. Attention was not focused on the material and individual manifestations of being, the rocks, plants, animals, persons enumerated and celebrated in the world dance, but on the generic and the spiritual, the aspect under which even living creatures still already inhabit the house of death, dream, wilderness, eternity. The dead and the unborn were to be invited to the dancing. The people of the rainbow, the images of dream and vision, all wild creatures, the waves of the sea, the sun, and all the other stars, were to be part of that dancing. So the earthly, mortal, human dancers invited that part of their own being which was before and would be after their earthly life, their soul, or their souls. Not the spirit, the essence of individuality, or not only the spirit, for individuality is mortality, but also the breath soul, that which is shared with, taken from, given back to the wholeness of being, and the self that is beyond the self. The practices and exercises of the inner sun involved breathing, as does yoga, but the theories and techniques resemble those of yoga only very remotely. The athletic austerity of yoga would not have been very congenial to the general valley preference for middling, abba. A closer parallel might be found in Chinese Taoist practices. The direct way, the royal road to communication or relationship with the four-house world, was through dream or trance. The indirect but durable connection, the low road, was through intellectual and physical discipline, the training of the inner sun. Inner sun material was not written down. The teachings were transmitted orally or non-verbally through the long course of training mentioned above. None of that material is contained in the following description. I can discuss only the practices of the outer sun as observed or as explained to me by participants and teachers. Outer sun exercises and rituals of the 21 days, then, were a progression farther and farther into a controlled condition of collective trance. The means of achieving this condition were fasting, drumming, singing, dancing, and journeying. Dream quest journeys of the sun were not solitary walks on the mountains, but were undertaken by a group of four or five who went for several days or for the whole three-week period into remote wild regions over on the wrong side of Amakulkan or other harsh ridge and canyon country outside the usual territory of valley use. This exceeding of boundaries was an affirmation of the community to which the seekers returned, as the child returns to the mother's house, as the souls return from vision. These quests into the wilderness in winter were considered dangerous, not so much physically as morally or socially. As they were often undertaken under a sanction of complete silence, not a word to be spoken during the entire journey, the psychological strain must have been fairly intense. Danger was also indicated in the journeys backward, rituals in which the normal limits establishing the safety and decency of daily life were deliberately transgressed. Such transgressions were undertaken only under the guidance and direction of students of the inner sun, but rival disciplines arose, such as the Lamb and Warrior Lodges, with their own esoteric rites. The journeys backward were not called reversals, Yahweh, except by the cults. They involved risk-taking and feats of physical endurance of the kind usually and carefully avoided by valley people. Drug-taking, purges, emetics, and hallucinogenics. Extreme ascetic practices, fasting, sitting motionless, sensory deprivation, and in the cults, self-mutilation and animal sacrifice. The most sinister and extraordinary manifestation of the 21 days was the white clown, a horrific figure, masked and cloaked in white, 9 or 10 feet tall, who singly or in groups stalked children in the woods and fields and even in the streets and ways of the town. Whether or not the white clowns did any physical harm, they were spoken of as if they did, and there were plenty of confirmatory legends and tales of the fate of children who met with white clowns, regular ghost stories. They found the child next morning standing against the trunk of the apple tree. He was as cold as the rain and as stiff as the wood, and his eyes were staring and staring, but the pupils of his eyes had turned dead white. The children, who had to reconcile their work of herding and gathering and so on, and their care of their gift trees, with the real terror of these lurking monsters, went out, when possible, in pairs or groups all during the 21 days. The other ceremonies of the period were held in the five heimas, or jointly on the dancing place. Anyone could join the drumming and the dancing, dropping in and out of the group as they chose. The meters and simple steps were traditional. I would describe their character as restless yet monotonous, and curiously attractive. One was drawn in. Time was obliterated. The dominant activity was the long singing. The words of a long singing were matrix syllables without rational meaning, with little or no core of meaningful words. A leader sang the chant, and those who joined her or him undertook to keep singing as long as the leader did. Such chants, held in one or several of the heimas, might go on for days without a break, the fasting participants singing themselves through trance to total exhaustion. They might rest for 4 or 5 days, and then repeat the long singing. This is the text of a long singing held in the yellow adobe haemas of Madidino. It would not ordinarily have been written down, but the singer told me that writing it was considered unnecessary, not inappropriate. Heya, kemeya, o, imitimi, owaya. A scholar of the inner sun was the leader, keeping the beat from time to time on a one-toned wooden drum and leading the chant. Each of the four phrases or syllables was chanted for no less than an hour at a time, and often several hours at a time, except the imitimi, which was sung a relatively few times in succession, always in multiples of nine. The ability of the singers to follow the leader in the completely unheralded change to a new syllable or a new musical pattern was uncanny. Two of them, evidently less gifted, did not sing, but maintained a barely audible keynote on the syllable O, and by spelling each other when they had to take breath, maintained, or gave the illusion of maintaining, a perfectly steady, unbroken sound until they gave out after about 11 hours. The whole long singing lasted almost 2 days and 2 nights. When the leader's voice gave out, which was only towards the middle of the second night, he kept up the beat on the drum and moved his lips soundlessly in the chant, whispering aloud only when the matrix word changed. Long singings that went on for more than a night or two had several leaders and might continue for 4 or 5 days and nights. Most older adolescents and many adults participated in at least one of the long singings. Most people practiced some degree of fasting and sexual abstinence during the 21 days, and more did so, and to a greater degree as the period went on. The mood of the community grew increasingly tense and somber. Stretched was their word for it. On the day before the solstitial sunrise, all the groups of seekers arrived back home, if possible, before nightfall, and scattered families reunited, if they could, at the maternal household. Married men often returned to their mother's house for the 21st night. The towns drew in as if under siege. At sunset, all doors were shut, all windows closed. The power sources had already been shut down, mills stopped, machinery halted. Insofar as possible, domestic animals were brought into the pens, barns, and byres, and at sunset all lights and fires were extinguished. A hearth fire or a candle lighted before sunset might be allowed to burn out, but the custom, well reinforced by the children and adolescents with their passion for tradition, was that no light should be relighted that night. If the fire went out, it stayed out. The longest night of the year was the darkest. During the afternoon of that day, people of the inner sun had dug a hole or pit somewhere in the commonplace of the town, a couple of feet across and fairly deep. After sunset, people came by this small pit or grave, which was called the Absence, and dropped into it a bit of ash from their hearth fire, or a bit of food wrapped in a piece of cloth, or a feather, or a lock of hair, or maybe a ring, or a carving, or a small roll of paper covered with writing, or some other thing of personal value or significance. Nothing was said or sung. People came by in a casual way to make this small private sacrifice. The silent and irregular procession went on until midnight or so. Each person returned alone in the dark to the dark house or to the silent haemas, where one spark of an oil lamp burned in the central room. Late in the night, even that was put out. Sometime in the dark hours, members of the Black Adobe Lodge filled up the Absence Pit and swept over it to obliterate and disguise its place. Alder of the Black Adobe said, "It is like the memory of the town there, under the surface where we walk in the commonplace, in the ground underfoot there, all the things that have been put there in silence in the dark, all the years, the forgotten things. They are put there to be forgotten. They are sacrificed." The 21st night is passed in silence in the dark. At the first sign of dawn, about cockcrow, one song is sung. 4 or 5 adolescent girls, trained by the inner sun, go up onto a high roof, or a tower if the town has one, and there stand to sing the winter carol, once only. Thorne said, "I always meant to stay awake and listen to the carol when I was a small child, or to wake up and wait for it. but I never did. I begged my mothers to wake me up to hear it, but when they did, it was over before I roused up enough to listen. But when I was older and heard that song for the first time, it seemed I had known it since before I was born. The words of that song are not written. Early in the morning, hearth fires and heaters are relighted, and the underground haymas are illuminated with festival lights until the sunrise, an event which, central as it is to the entire festival, is not formally observed at all. Alder said, "At the center is the absence. It is so." Speaking, he held his hands facing each other, slightly curved inward, about an inch apart, the left thumb pointing down and the right thumb up. The only event which might be said to mark the sunrise was a negative one, the disappearance of the white clowns. At that sacred moment their power was broken. They vanished until next year, and the children were free of the lurking horror. The gift trees were presented with much informal family ceremony. Some cooking had been done even during the fast in preparation for this morning, and during the day of the sunrise, really heavy and impressive cooking got under way for the feasting, which would be going on for 4 days in the houses and the haymas. In the haymas, the morning dances of the sun began some time after sunrise and were held each morning for 4 days, 5 every fourth year. The singers were people of the inner sun. Certain dances were performed by masked inner sun dancers. Others were danced by anyone who had learned the dance. Alder said, "If the dances are properly conducted and well danced, the sky people will be there dancing with the earth people. That's why you never take hands, dancing the morning dances of the sun. Between each earth person and the next, a place is left for a four-house person to dance. So also the songs leave a silence after every line sung for the other voices to sing, whether we hear them or not, and the drums beat only every second note." 15-year-old upstream fish said, "The morning songs of the sun aren't gloomy like the songs of the 21 days. They're mysterious, beautiful. They make your heart light. They make it easy to sing. They make you feel as if everyone singing, the living and the unborn and the dead, were all together in the valley, that no one was lost, that nothing was wrong." Thorn said, "Although I know it takes the singers of the inner sun years and years to learn and remake the morning songs, again, when I hear them sung, I know that I know them. I know them as I do the sunlight." In the afternoons of the 4 sun-risen days, clowns came into town, not tall and white, but supernaturally fat, and dressed in green, with no mask, but fanciful beards and whiskers, pluming and curling and trailing, made of white wool or tree moss. The sun clowns often led and tried to ride billy goats, and they gave all kinds of little presents, mostly sweets, to the younger children. All fasts were broken, and food was set out in every household for visitors. Thorn said, "A lot of people celebrate with grape brandy or hard cider along with all that eating, so they get drunk, and there's a good deal of fooling around. But nobody gets angry or wild, because the children are having a good time, and because of the four-house people still being with us. You always set aside some of the food you serve or eat for them, and pour out the first draught of anything you drink. And in the haymas they're still singing the half-silent songs." Slowly, during this 4 or 5 days of the sun risen, the two arms of the world separated, the four house beings returned to their plane of existence, earthly people to the daily concerns of mortal life. End of side 12. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette. Thorn said, "Working in the house, cleaning up or cooking, working in the workshops, people sing songs that go along with the rainbow people as they go away and keep going slowly farther away, back to their houses. We sing those songs and send our breath partway with them, breathing out." Alder said, "Breathing out, singing, we follow them, walking after them for a while, seeing the world as they see it, with the sun's eyes that see only light."